Nyt alkaa, nyt alkaa. Lämpimästi tervetuloa teille kaikille tähän valtakunnalliseen opiskelijoiden hyvinvointia edistävään OHO-symposiumiin. Sekä te kaikki täällä Ruusupuiston salissa, että sitten myöskin te, jotka striimauksen välityksellä tätä tilaisuutta seuraatte. Olen Ulla Klemola, Jyväskylän yliopiston opetuksen kehittämispäällikkö ja OHO-hankkeen johtaja, ja toimin näinä päivinä näiden yhteisten tilaisuuksiemme juontajana. Ja nämä yhteiset tilaisuudet myöskin tulkataan suomalaiselle viittomakielelle. Tapahtumamme avaa Jyväskylän yliopiston koulutuksesta vastaava vararehtori, OHO-hankkeen ohjausryhmän puheenjohtaja Marja-Leena Laakso. Ole hyvä, Maana.
Hyvää huomenta kaikille ja erittäin lämpimästi tervetuloa tähän valtakunnalliseen OHO-symposiumiin. Heti sellainen olo, kun tänne tänä aamuna tuli, että semmoinen hyvinvoinnin ja osallisuuden värinät alkoi kulkea kropassa ja mielessä, kun tiesi, että millaiseen tilaisuuteen tulee ja millaisen asian äärelle. Haluan erittäin lämpimästi toivottaa teidät kaikki tervetulleeksi, erityisesti kaikki OHO-hankkeen vastuutoimijat, paljon työtä tässä kuluneiden vuosien aikana tehneet, kaikki opettajat, opiskelijat, koulutuksen opetusalan asiantuntijat, erittäin lämpimästi tervetuloa tähän symposiumiin. Kaikkinensa meitä on yli 200 osallistujaa, mikä on ihan valtavan upea juttu ja kertoo siitä, että tämä aihe on äärimmäisen tärkeä ja koskettaa meitä kaikkia korkeakouluissa työtä tekeviä. Siinä kohtaa, kun OHO-hanketta käynnistettiin, itse en ollut siinä mukana, että mä oon hypännyt liikkuvaan junaan, niin silloinkin katseltiin noita opiskelijoiden terveystietojen, korkeakouluopiskelijoiden terveystietoja tai terveyskyselyiden tietoja ja sieltä niitä hälyttäviä prosentteja siitä, että kuinka paljon meidän opiskelijoilla on opiskelukykyyn, hyvinvointiin, tämmöisen osallisuuden kokemukseen, yksinäisyyden kokemuksiin liittyviä haasteita, ja tähän aiheeseen tartuttiin. Ja tänä päivänä tiedetään, että samanlaisten asioiden kanssa edelleen tehdään tai pitää tehdä töitä, ja sen takia on ihan mahtava tietää, että kaikki ne menetelmät ja toimintatavat ja mittarit, joita on kehitetty, niin on sellaisia, joita kuumeisesti odotetaan ja tarvitaan tuolla kentällä. Et ajattelen, että hyvin paljon on nyt keskustelussa tämä valtakunnallisen visio 2030, tämä määrällinen tavoite, että meidän on saatava yli 50% opiskelijoista korkeakoulutuksen pariin, ja se on hyvä tavoite, tärkeä tavoite meidän maallemme, maamme menestykselle ja tulevaisuuden osaajien kouluttamiselle. Mutta se määrällinen tavoite on yksi osa tätä, että ellei meidän täällä korkeakouluissa opiskelevat opiskelijat voi hyvin, elleivät he koe osallisuutta ja koe, että voisivat hyödyntää omaa potentiaaliaan ja heidän opiskelukykynsä voisi optimaalisesti niin kuin toteutua, niin nämä määrälliset tavoitteet on ikään kuin toissijaisia tai alisteisia sille. No jotenkin semmoinen olo, itse katsoin jossain vaiheessa omaa kalenteria, niin en muista milloin tämän tapahtuman on sinne merkinnyt, niin mulla luki siellä, että OHO päättöseminaaria. Ja jo jonkin aikaa sitten muutin sen, että tähän on tultu. pitkä tie on kuljettu vuodesta 2017. Tai en tiedä, että miten te, jotka olette koko ajan olleet niin kuin sydänverellä ja kädet savessa tässä mukana, että tuntuuko tämä pitkältä pätkältä tehtyä työtä vai onko sellainen olo, että nämä vuodet hujahti itse asiassa aika nopeasti. Mutta että olennaista on toki tiedostaa, että tämä ei ole päätös. Että valtavasti on saatu aikaan, upeita asioita on kehitetty, mutta jollakin tavalla tässä on varmasti nyt kuitenkin kyse uuden alusta, uuden lehden kääntämisestä. Että nyt se kaikki kehittelytyö, mitä on tehty, niin nyt on erittäin tärkeää huolehtia siitä, että se saadaan jalkautumaan ja käyttöön ja sovellettavaksi, sovitettavaksi kunkin korkeakoulun omiin toimintakulttuureihin ja toimintatapoihin. Sellainen olo jotenkin, minkä verran itse olen ollut tässä mukana, että jos ajattelen näitä hankkeen teemoja, opiskelukyky, niin jos näitä sovittaa niin kuin tähän hankkeeseen, niin ajattelen, että se ehkä kertoo siitä, että, tai voi kääntää sen niin, että tässä hankkeessa on ihan selvästi ollut kykyä tehdä työtä yhdessä, oppia yhdessä, ja koko ajan on viestiä, mitä olen saanut, on sellainen olo, että tämä on ollut yhteistyöhanke, jossa hyvinvointi on ollut läsnä. Se varmaan kumpuaa siitä, että kaikki mukana olevat ovat kokeneet tekevänsä erittäin merkityksellistä työtä ja henki on ollut innostava, kannustava ja lämmin. Mä ajattelen, että jo tällä on ollut ihan valtava merkitys, että 11 korkeakoulua voi tämmöisessä upeassa hengessä tehdä yhdessä asioita. Se olisi melkein aplodien paikka, tämänkaltainen yhteistyö ja tällä tavalla onnistettu. Aplodit tässä kohtaa sille. Ja tietysti se kolmas teema, se osallisuus, niin toivon ja olen todistanut, että semmoista osallisuuden sekä teille, jotka tosiaan olette niin kuin ihan siellä ytimessä tehneet töitä, mutta tiedän, että nämä monet menetelmät on jo koeteltu. Siellä on paljon ollut opettajia ja opiskelijoita osallisina antamassa palautetta, reflektoimassa, tuottamassa sitä tietoa, että miten nämä menetelmät, mittarit, toimintatavat toimii ja miten niitä voidaan edelleen kehittää. Että se tässä on ytimenä, että tämä on meidän yhteinen juttu ja tämän tulee tukea sitä osallisuutta. No, tämän seminaari tai symposiumin, just one thing I would like to also warmly welcome to our international guest here, Helen Marriott. You come from European Student Union from Brussels, and I'm extremely happy that we also have an international perspective in these matters. It's very important to hear. One month ago, our Education Council visited UCL, University College London, and we have a many big list of things that we wanted to discuss. But one thing that came as the most important, which was not exactly in our list, was student well-being. And it was a major challenge that this very high-level university, University College London, brought up. That it is a challenge that is a very challenging issue at the moment. So I think that we share these challenges worldwide or European wide. So it's very important. Thank you for coming and very warmly welcome. No sitten tämän symposiumin tavoitteena on nyt sitten päästä niin kuin niitä maistiaisia kokemaan erilaisista kehitellyistä menetelmistä, mittareista, toimintatavoista. Ja itse kun tuota ohjelmaa on katsonut, niin ajatellut, että ainoa asia, mikä täällä voi olla niin kuin jollakin tavalla ei-hyvinvointia edistävä, on se lievä ahdistuksen tunne, mikä tulee siitä, että minkä ihmeen valitsisi noista kaikista noin mielenkiintoisista, niin onneksi siellä on uusintoja joistakin ja varmasti meistä jokainen saa sitten, kun käsikirja vuodenvaihteessa valmistuu, niin päästä kokeilemaan ja kokemaan näitä kaikkia, mutta nyt on pieni haaste, että mihin työpajaan sitä menee, mihin näille äärimmäisen tärkeille teemoille itsensä näiden kahden päivän aikana nyt altistaa. Toivottavasti te olette ratkaisseet sen helpommin kuin minä, minulla on aina yleensä vaikeuksia valita elämässä asioita. Mutta tässä kohtaa lämpimästi kiitoksia, sydämellinen kiitos kaikesta siitä tehdystä työstä. En osaa sitä varmaan riittävästi ilmaista, mutta hyvin kiitollinen olen siitä upeasta yhteistyöstä 11 korkeakoulun välillä. Aivan huikeaa työtä. Ja toivon, että tämän illan sitten se huipennus siellä, se meidän yhteinen iltamme klassikkoelokuvan ja upean musiikin kanssa, niin omalla tavallaan on myös yksi kiitos teille kaikille. Teille, jotka annatte nyt aikaanne ja tulette kokemaan näitä menetelmiä ja sitä kautta levittämään sanaa ja viemään näitä tärkeitä toimintatapoja eteenpäin. Että teille kaikille, jotka tätä työtä olette tehneet, niin lämmin kiitos ja sitten vielä toivon mukaan se semmoinen hyvän olon rauhoittumisen hetki saadaan kokea sitten vielä siellä illalla, semmoinen palkkio meille kaikille. Oikein antoisaa hyvinvoinnin seminaari, symposiumia teille kaikille. Lämpimästi vielä tervetuloa.
Kiitos paljon Maanalle. Ja täytyy sanoa, että olen ihan valtavan iloinen nähdessäni tällaisen joukon täällä tänään, joka on kiinnostunut opiskelijoiden hyvinvoinnista ja oppimisesta. Ja tässä tulee melkein vähän niin kuin sanatonkin olo, että aivan mahtavaa, että olet tullut tänne tänään. Pari sanaa, mistä lähdettiin, niin kuin Maanakin tuossa kertoi, eli tutkimuksen kertoma toi meille sen ponnistuspisteen lähteä tätä hanketta kehittämään. Ja olemme tosiaan opetus- ja kulttuuriministeriön rahoittama 3-vuotinen hanke, joka alkoi 2017, yksi niin sanottu kärkihanke. Ja liikkeelle lähtö käynnistyi siis näistä tutkimushavainnoista, mihin Maanakin viittasi, eli opintojen etenemiseen haitallisesti vaikuttavat opiskelijoiden kokema yksinäisyys, opiskeluverkostojen ulkopuolelle jääminen ja akateemisten opiskelutaitojen puutteet. Vaikka varsin suuri osa opiskelijoista voi hyvin, mielialaoireita, stressiä, yksinäisyyden kokemusta ja oppimisvaikeuksia esiintyy yleisesti. Ja nämä ongelmat heijastuvat helposti myös työnhakuun ja työllistyvyyteen. Ja olemme tosiaan nyt sitten isolla porukalla tehneet työtä luodaksemme optimaalisia edellytyksiä opiskella ja voida hyvin. Ja tosiaan synnyttäneet nyt sitten monenlaisia menetelmiä, työtapoja, uutta tietoa, joka on teille tässä symposiumissa tarjolla. Kuten Maana mainitsi, niin meillä on tulossa käsikirja, verkko-opas. Ja sen etusivu näyttää ehkä suurin piirtein tuollaiselta. Meillä graafikko työstää asiaa ja nyt me oholaiset, kun ollaan tämä hieno ponnistus viety loppuun, niin jatkamme vielä tekstien parissa ja tavoitteena on tarjota valtakunnallisesti oho-opas, käytännöllinen työkaluja tarjoava, harjoitteita, menetelmiä tarjoava opas, joka on sitten teidän käytettävissänne aina. Olemme tosiaan tämän hankkeen alusta saakka tietoisesti rakentanut myös meidän toimijoiden yhteisöä ja tehneet tätä kehittämistyötä yhdessä. Ja nämä päivät ei olisi syntynyt ilman tätä yhteisöä ja jokaista sen yksilöä. Ja nyt mä haluaisin pyytää, että meidän Ohopoppo nousee ylös, että te näette, kenen kanssa kannattaa näinä päivinä erityisesti jutella. Eli tällaista porukkaa nykäskää hihasta ja sitten nyt te saatte istua. Eli meitä tunnistaa näistä ohopaidoista, kaikki ei ihan vielä ehtinyt sitä pukea, mutta niistä meitä tunnistaa. Sitten käytännön asioissa meillä on meidän ihana koordinaattori Heini. Heini on tämä. Heini on meidän hankkeen aarre. Ja samoin Tapio, Henrik, Tytti on siellä. Ja lisäksi tärkeitä ihmisiä on meidän oho-opiskelijat, joita näette kanssa tässä. Hyvä, ja kohta he vielä teidän päämenoksi on vielä jotakin. No niin, mutta tässä symposiumissa meillä kaikilla on mahdollisuus toimia yhteisönä ja ajatella yhdessä. Saamme rakentaa opiskelijoiden hyvinvointia edistävää yhteisöä. Kukin itselleen sopivalla ja turvallisella tavalla. Näiden päivien aikana saat kertoa näkemyksiäsi ja saat olla hiljaa. Saat innostua ja saat olla eri mieltä. Voit kyseenalaistaa ja tuoda toista näkökulmaa. Mutta voit myös tukea ja kannustaa. Näinä päivinä saa siis onnistua, epäonnistua ja pitää hauskaa, koska vain sillä tavalla me opitaan. Eli aloitetaan yhdessä oppiminen, pidetään huolta toisistamme, virkistytään, jotta korkeakouluissa kukaan ei jäisi yksin, ei nyt eikä tulevaisuudessa. Vielä pieni katsaus päivän ohjelmaa ja muutamiin käytännön asioihin. Eli tässä näette tämän päivän ohjelmaa. Työskentelemme nyt kello 12 asti tässä Ruusupuiston ihanilla portailla. Ja sen jälkeen lähdemme toimimaan kahdessa rakennuksessa, eli täällä Ruusupuistossa ja liikunnalla. Ja nyt tuolla moottoritien yläpuolella olevat punaiset ruudut ovat niitä, eikös niin? Mä en tiedä, kuinka hyvin te näette nyt sitä karttaa. Mä en nyt erota yhtään, mutta me ollaan siis toi alimmainen kolmio, eikö niin, on Ruusupuisto. Ja sitten tuonne suuntaan lähtee liikunta. Siellä on sitten viittoja teille. Joko, jos mahdollista, suoraan portaita ylös, taikka sitten museoiden ohi, Alvar Aalto-museon ohi ja seuraavasta ylämäkeä ylös. Sieltä löytyy. Ja sitten itse rakennuksista löydätte vielä ohokylttejä, jotka ohjaavat teitä saleihin, missä työpajat ja seminaariesitykset toteutetaan. Ja nyt varmaan ei oikein muista, että mihin oli ilmoittautunut ja sitten voi olla, että mielikin muuttuu. Eli me ollaan suurin piirtein teidän ennakkoilmoittamien intressien mukaan valinneet salin kokoja, mutta että menkää niin hyvissä ajoin, kun ehditte, niin sitten omaan salinne. Ja tässä kohtaa ehkä semmoinen erityishuomio, että nämä meidän symposiumin teemat on kiinnostaneet ja koskettaneet suurta joukkoa. Ja se tuo meille pientä haastetta tilojen koon suhteen, varsinkin kun on vielä kiihkein opetusaika menossa. Eli toivon meille kaikille semmoista joustavaa mieltä ja sopusijaa antaa asennetta. Tässä ylemmässä kartassa näette ravintoloita, lounasravintoloita. Ja nyt on tärkeää, että jakaannutte näihin eri ravintoloihin, koska jos me kaikki jonotetaan täällä Ruusupuistossa, niin sitten meillä menee ihan pipariksi tämä loppupäivä aikataulu. Eli tässä on Ruusupuiston Uuno-ravintola, sitten Liikunnalla on Syke-ravintola, siinä lähes vastapäätä on Lotsi ja vielä Ylioppilaskunnan opinkiviravintolat. Eli toivomme, että hajaannutte kaikkiin näihin ravintoloihin, eli silloin me turvataan lounastunnin riittävyys ja työpajojen alkamisen ajoissa. Oltaisiko me nyt valmiita lähtemään liikkeelle tähän OHO-symposiumiin, ja koska hyvinvointi on kaikkien sydämen asia, niin teemme sen pienellä alkuveryttelyllä ja Susanna ohjaa meidät siihen.
Huomenta vaan kaikille meidänkin puolesta. Aloitetaan sillä, että kaikki voi nousta seisomaan siellä omalla paikallaan. Ja vähän lämmitellään ja herätellään kroppaa tähän päivään. Aloitetaan päästä. Ja sieltä vähän voi niskaa alkaa pyörittelemään puolelta toiselle. Hellästi sieltä voi käyttää myös takakautta vähän ympäri. Ja päästä siirrytään seuraavaksi hartioihin. Hartioita nostetaan ylös ja viedään takakautta ympäri. Muutaman kerran sieltä ympäri. Ja sitten toinen suunta. Ja monesti rintaranka on meillä tosi jäykkä, joten nyt harjoitellaan vähän sitä. Työnnetään tuonne ihan eteen ja sitten työnnetään taaksepäin. Ja taas eteen. Ja taakse. Vähän vielä kiertoa molemmille puolille. Jes, sitten siirrytään sinne lantion alueelle. Lantiota ympyrää. Mukavan tiivis tunnelma siellä näyttää olevan. Ja sitten toiseen suuntaan vielä. Yes. Kurkotellaan käsillä korkealle. Voi nousta varpaille ja vähän haastaa tasapainoakin. Vuoron perään toista kättä korkeammalle. Mahtavaa. Sitten katsotaan, onko meidän aivot ja koordinaatio hereillä. Toisessa kädessä peukalo ylös ja toisessa kädessä vain etusormi. Sen jälkeen vaihdetaan niiden paikkaa. Ja varmista, että on pelkästään etusormi ja peukku. Ja niin nopeasti kuin vaan omat aivot tänä aamuna antaa periksi. Pelkkä etusormi, peukku. Mahtavaa. Aivot on saatu hereille. Sitten vielä ravistellaan koko kroppa. Ja varmistetaan vielä, että jokainen meistä tietää, että ketä siellä on ympärillä, niin esittäydy siinä muutamalle ihmiselle tervehdi ja toivota hyvät huomenet sinne. Mahtavaa. Kiitos paljon teille kaikille. Ja voitte istuutua, kun olette tervehtineet toisianne.
Next, I have a great pleasure to introduce you Hélène Mariot and Liisa Hyytiäinen. Hélène comes from Brussels and European Student Union, as we heard. European Student Union is the umbrella organization of 45 national unions of students from 39 countries. The aim of ESU is to represent and promote the educational, social, economical, and cultural interests of students at the European level. ESU represents almost 20 million students in Europe. Hélène gives us perspectives to students' equality in different parts of Europe. Liisa Hyytiäinen is the vice chairman of Suomen oppilaskuntien liitto, SAMOK, joka koostuu 25 eri opiskelijakunnasta ammattikorkeakouluissa. Hallituksen jäsenenä hänen erityisaluettaan on koulutuksellinen tasa-arvo ja sen edistäminen. Liisa opiskelee liiketaloutta Hämeen ammattikorkeakoulussa ja on ilahduttavasti innostunut myös pedagogiikan ja koulutuksen kehittämisestä. First, Hélène will give us her presentation and then we can take a couple of questions from the audience. And then it's Liisa's turn and her speech and a couple of questions. And afterwards, Hélène and Liisa will discuss with each other and with us about these issues that we are about to hear now. Okay, Hélène, floor is yours.
Good morning, everybody. So we are having a small technical issue that we are trying to solve right now. It was working 10 minutes ago. Do you want me to... It always happens. Maybe if you run it from the drive, because before we run it from the drive and it was working. Okay. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, the OHO project, for inviting the European Students Union to give this presentation. So basically, I'm going to focus on the topics of accessibility and completion of higher education from the perspective of mental health and well-being of students, and focusing on why those two topics matter and how we can improve them, what tools we can use to improve them. So, for a start, I will give a brief presentation of what is ESU, the European Students' Union, so that you also have the context in which I created this presentation and the perspective, the quite broad perspective that I will try to bring as well. So, as it was said before, we are an umbrella organization of 49 national union of students from 39 different countries across Europe, and our mission is mainly to represent, defend, and strengthen the students' educational, democratic, political, and social rights across Europe. And our core principle is to have an accessible higher education to anyone who wishes to participate, but this higher education should also be of high quality with a strong and democratic student participation. So that's the core values of ESU that we are mainstreaming in all of our activities. About our members, here you can see a map of which countries are part of ESU. All the National Union of Students that we have as members need to respect certain principles. So they need to be open to all students in their countries, regardless of any kind of background that they might have. And what is really important is that they are all student-run, autonomous, representative, and they operate according to democratic principle. And they are independent in their choices. So that's the criteria that all of our members respect to be member of ESU. We were created in 1982. Obviously, at the beginning, we were not 45 National Union of Students. It was very small, but over the years, we grew and we were able to have this broad European perspective. And every year, we have a team of 13 elected and selected representatives. Each of us have specific area of work and competencies. And we are here to lead the work of the organization on a day-to-day basis. And what we do is we work, well, based on campaigns. We do policy work, capacity building for our member unions, training, and we do also a lot of lobbying with a lot of partners. And briefly, to finish this introduction, we work with European institutions, which means that we are trying to lobby and bring the students' perspective and defend the students' rights to any kind of institution that is relevant. We work a lot with the Council of Europe for many projects, study sessions, this kind of project. We are the only student voice in the Bologna Process follow-up group. So ESU is the only representative of students within the group. And we also, at the moment, are developing international partnerships with other student organizations across the world. So that's ESU in a nutshell. Don't hesitate if you have any questions afterwards. So to jump into the topic, of course we are going to talk about mental health and well-being, but I thought at the beginning it's interesting to have a bit of context and to see in what those notions are integrated in. So first of all, I would offer you to talk about the social dimension of higher education. And if we had this moment of physical activity before to wake up, now I will ask you to take your phone and to have a moment to start thinking as well and participate. So basically, the question will be, what are the three concepts, words, expression, combination of words, that come to your mind when you hear the name social dimension of higher education? Just go to menti.com, enter the following code, and just write the three expressions that come to your mind. And we will see here a very nice tag cloud, I think is the name of your ideas. So for the moment, we have in the middle socioeconomic background a lot of equality and equity, equality, participation of students, freedom, community, networks, inclusion, diversity. That's great. So we can already see that there is a common understanding around some concepts. So equality, inclusion, cooperation, participation. That's very interesting. Thank you very much. So if possible, I can export this at the end and also share it with the leaders of the project if you're interested in having the clouds. But the trends in the way of thinking, like you agree on the ideas behind social dimension. Where is the present? Okay, yeah. All right. So as we saw already in the cloud, the main ideas that come to mind when we tackle the social dimension are obviously linked to equality, inclusion, kind of non-discriminative measures, freedom, and the acceptance of all. According to our policy paper on social dimension from 2015, higher education and the society coexist in an inseparable symbiosis. They affect and influence each other mutually, and the social dimension is embedded into both. The social dimension defines the composition of the two and at the same time is under the influence of the symbiosis. So, of course, those words can seem a bit blurry. So, but they are the words of our policy paper to try to explain the following. The main thing to keep in mind is that when mentioning social dimension is that higher education is not a separate world of society. It's part of the society. And there is a mutual influence of the society as a whole and higher education. And higher education, any given higher education system, institution, need to be understood as well in the context of a larger society, a broader perspective. And that way, higher education is a reflection of the society that it's in, of the country that it's evolving in. And in ESU, we think that, therefore, there is a strong responsibility for higher education of inclusion, and that the responsibility of higher education is not only on educational purposes, but it's a wider responsibility towards the society. And to achieve more social equality, we need, therefore, to have a better and more diverse higher education that actually reflects the diversity of our societies, that is not only showing and reproducing the privilege mechanism, but it is actually showing the diversity of the society. Basically, this is a kind of a graphic that we created lately for the World Access to Higher Education Day to show that, well, higher education and society are both parts of the same circle in different end of the circle, and social dimension is somewhere in between, is where things overlap. So this is the matter of recognition of prior learning, the things linked to housing, grants, tuition fees, mental health, well-being, lifelong learning, information, everything in between. And why am I mentioning the social dimension? Well, the term social dimension is the term that is commonly used in English and also across the Bologna process to tackle all of those issues. And I'm mentioning it because there are two main aspects that can be mainstreamed through every factor influencing the social dimension is the accessibility to higher education and the chances of completion of a given curricula by a given student. And those are the two factors that I would like to go more in details about. So what do we mean when we talk about accessibility, and how would it be linked to mental health and well-being, and why is it important? Well, the accessibility is the ability and possibility to enroll in higher education, so to actually become a student. So this is both tackling what happens before entering higher education, but also very much at the start in the process of enrolling. So as we saw before, as higher education is not separate from the rest of society, the matter of accessibility is very much linked to all the societal mechanism and barriers that can exist. The background of the student, the gender, the language, the prior education, the financial situation, any kind of discrimination that the students can sadly be under. As an example, for instance, students that are economically less well off will have less chances of enrolling in higher education because of financial barriers. That's a common trend across Europe. So that's the kind of parameters that can influence the accessibility to higher education and a potential student's enrollment in a curricula. And why do we always mention accessibility with completion? It's because completion is at the end. So it's the action of actually finishing and completing their curricula. But they work together because it's also linked, the fact that you are going to complete in a different amount of years your curricula is also linked to all the same mechanism and barriers. So the discrimination, the language, the support, the financial support, any kind of situation that you can have as a student. And it's everything that will influence a student's success and graduation. So to sum it up, we need to talk about both and look at them both, because as a student, you can have a lot of accessibility mechanism and support. You can have a lot of programs to help you enroll in higher education, being accepted in the curricula of your choice. But then once you're in, nothing happens to help you actually complete. If you need support, maybe nothing is happening in that way. If you need language courses to follow your studies, maybe they don't happen. So that's why you need to think about both accessibility and completion. Now let's see more in detail some kind of factors that influence both the accessibility and the completion of higher education. I think first of all, we need to mention the structural and non-structural discriminative mechanism. So when we talk about structure, is when the kind of administrative structure is itself discriminating against some students. And usually it's not because the structures and the people who created them want to discriminate. It's because the system was always created and perpetuated by the same kind of people who didn't think about those issues. For instance, we can talk about physical accessibility to the buildings. The buildings were, in many countries, are not designed with universal designs that everybody can access. And when we talk about non-structural discriminative mechanism, it's everything that is related to kind of one-on-one discrimination that someone can suffer from. The academic support is key in a way that, okay, maybe you access higher education, but you will need a bit more support to better study your classes. And in some universities, of course, this exists. You have support moments, extra classes that you can attend, online procedures that you can follow, digital tools that you can use to better understand the classes and have the support that you need. But it also doesn't exist in some places, and that's something that is key to completion. In the issue of language, that's also something that is going to influence the completion and the accessibility. If you need to have, for instance, sign language interpretation to understand your classes, and you know for a fact that all the universities in your region do not provide them or that they are very costly, you have less chances of enrolling in higher education at all, because you know that you will not be able to actually attend and understand your curricula. So that's one of the examples. Then the financial and material support systems, basically grants, when you have special support systems to buy your study books, your material, that also influences a lot whether you are going to complete and even access higher education. The housing and transport situation, if you need to have an apartment or a student room, if you can afford it, if you live too far away from any kind of university, if there is public transport accessible to students. The design of the curricula, of course, and if it fits your own need as a student and your own ambitions. And as I mentioned before, the physical access to the facilities. Okay, it doesn't show. Well, basically, what doesn't show, I just said that, and of course, two factors that really influence accessibility and completion are mental health and well-being of students. So first, as short definitions, even though it's always quite difficult to define such broad and important concepts very shortly, mental health is the mental and psychological state of a person at a given moment. And of course, as a person, you can go through a wide range of mental states in your life in a given period. And they can be more positive, more negative. But overall, and still nowadays, the unfortunately, the trend is that there is a lot of stigma when talking about mental health. It's possible to talk to your friends, to your professor, and say, okay, I have not attended the classes last week because I had a sore throat and I had a fever and I couldn't attend. That's something that is usually perfectly acceptable to say. When we talk about mental health and you try to explain that you couldn't do a certain thing or that you cannot do certain things because of your mental health and your mental state, usually you think twice or three times or more before actually saying it, if you say it at all, because there's still a lot of stigma around explaining and talking about mental health. And that's one of the very important points, and we will come back to it. So mental health is the psychological state of a person, but it also entails any kind of psychological and mental condition that someone can go through. And the well-being is the way that you feel yourself. So it's directly linked to the mental health, but also to the physical health of a student. And what is the link to higher education? Well, there are extremely important factors for when you think about the accessibility and completion of higher education. Because the thing is, they will directly influence the fact that, first, your confidence in actually applying for university or enrolling in university. And second, they will also influence if you are going to complete your studies at all at some point. And there needs to be a rise in awareness of the student situation to understand that, students can also suffer from stress, anxiety, burnout, pressure, and actually those issues are much more common than what we can think at the beginning. And it's something that is actually rising lately. And it impacts directly the ability to learn and to fully participate in higher education. And it influences, obviously, the results of a given student when this happens. And they are crucial to mention because your mental health state and your well-being do not happen alone out of nowhere. They are directly linked to the other factors some of them we mentioned before, some other we will see after. But Now I will ask you to go back to menti.com and think a bit of the first three factors that you think can influence mental health in a higher education context or for students. I think. Do you all have access to the? Sorry, it's. Yeah. So you should be able to click next. So for now, teaching is the leading factor. As we can see, also physical health. Some of the words, I don't know if you can all see, but we have so teaching, social relationships, physical health, stress, future, state of the world, anxiety, lack of sleep, expectations, participation, stress at home, financial situation, support. And what is really interesting that we can see already is that, most of the factors can be at the same time factor and consequences of your mental health state. For instance, if we take depression or loneliness, they can both be factors but also consequences of a broader situation. And loneliness can be as well like the factor. You will be in a negative state of mental health because you feel lonely, because you don't have a lot of support around you. But it can also be the result of a negative and bad mental health state. So thank you very much. So as it was mentioned, I'm going to explain some of the factors, and you will see they're directly linked to what we mentioned when talking about the social dimension, and that's why I introduced with it. So first of all, and something that is really now taken into account in our work as ESU, is the through the perspective of mental health, is the financial situation of a student. So according to the Eurostudent study, which you probably have heard of, 50% of the student population on average in Europe works outside of their study, and I think part of them, most of them of this 50% have to study to be actually be able to sustain themselves, otherwise they just can't afford anything. And when we talk about working outside of higher education, it's not necessarily working a job that is related to your field of studies. It can be any kind of job that you take because you have to, otherwise you do not survive. And this is a first factor that is really important when talking about mental health. If you have to work, let's say, between 10 to 20, 25 hours a week, in addition to all of your classes, that you have to attend, but also all the papers that you have to write, all the research that you have to lead, it becomes immediately more difficult to have the same amount of chances as someone who does not have to work outside of higher education to actually complete your studies on time and to be able to pass all of your exams on time. And the fact that you know that you have to have that job and to go there and to also be good at it, because otherwise you will not be able to basically pay your rent or buy food, put puts a lot of pressure on the students and on the mental health, and it does not allow them to actually concentrate as much as possible on the experience of higher education and the studies themselves. And as I just mentioned, what is the worst factor in that situation is actually the uncertainty about sustaining oneself, not knowing if you can actually afford your student room next month, and basically if you can afford food this week, because that's the situation that many students are in right now in Europe, and let's not forget that. So the financial situation is of course very linked to the material situation, the access to housing. According to Eurostudent, still 23% of students on average experience accommodation cost overburden, so that they cannot cope with the cost of accommodation, and that it puts a lot of it puts strain on their mental health and on their on themselves. And what's happening if you don't have access to proper housing? Well, either you stay with your family, or you will need to have to live somewhere that is maybe too far away from university, but somewhere that is more affordable. What would be the consequence if you don't come from the very city that you are studying in, or if you need to live a bit outside? Well, it's the fact that you will have to spend a lot of time in transport, in public transport, and that usually public transport is not free. So it's another cost that you will have to cover by spending even more time going to university. So we can already imagine the influence that having to spend maybe 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour and a half, and the same amount of time in the evening after the whole day to go back home after studying. It puts something more on the mental health of students. And imagine with that, if you have directly when you go back home to go to your job and then at some point study and write your papers. And that's a very common situation across Europe. The material situation is also the access to studying material. Will you be able to afford your books this semester? Will you be able to afford the material that you need for your art school if you're studying art, so buying any kind of technology that you will need and that are needed to complete your curriculum. As was mentioned in the tech cloud, well, mental health conditions can result from different mental health states caused by different factors, but they can also already be there. But the thing is, having a pre-existing mental health condition is not the end of things. If you have enough support and if you have access to sufficient healthcare to be able to feel better and to treat them. But the thing is that in many situations, students do not have access to affordable healthcare easily. Maybe there is nothing on campus. Maybe they don't know who to talk to. And that's aggravated by the stigma that is around mental health as well. Almost there. Something that was also very important to mention for us, for ESU, is the rhythm of study and the pressure that can be put on students. Because you have, obviously, the timetable that you have, your classes that you have to attend, to participate. But, of course, you have all the work that you have to provide on the side, the papers you have to write, the research you have to lead. And in some curricula, the workload is simply too much. If we think about medical studies across Europe, where the workload is like enormous, and that's there is pressure from the professors, but also competition between the students so that you can be the best and actually pass some selections at some point, or even to enter, and sometimes even in the middle of the curricula, in some cases, you also have these kind of selections. The pressure is enormous, and as I mentioned before, imagine being in that situation that you have to be, to not only pass, but be the best in the kind of ranking, but you have to work and to travel 2 hours and a half every day because you can't afford a student room. Just imagine. Another case that is less often mentioned, but that's something, I mean, the Belgian Union of Students worked on that a few years ago, is the case of art schools. Actually, it was found that, it's in the Belgian context, but it's a trend, having worked on art schools before, that is also across Europe, that the pressure put on students is actually very, very big. But this is not often mentioned because art studies are often devaluated in the mind of people. But a student actually, in the period of what you would call jury or presentation or exams, sometimes they sleep on, I mean, the Belgian study showed that the student evaluated their average number of hours of sleep during those periods, so during 1 or 2 months in a row of, I don't know, sleeping, I think it was 4 hours a night, plus the pressure of the teachers, the cost of the material, and sometimes harassment from certain professors. And then something that was mentioned, and I will go quite fast on that, is the support from family and friends, both financial and also moral support, and actually believing you when you want to talk about your mental health, not judging you. And the teaching methods, which is linked to what we already talked about before. The teaching should not only be adapted to a certain type of student, but should actually be able to work for a diverse student body representing the diversity of the society. So everything that we mentioned and even more will influence the student's mental health and well-being. And just to finish, I think I have 5 minutes, right? Yeah. So those were the examples before the trends across Europe that we have noticed with ESU throughout our work. Unfortunately, I think we're going to skip the tech cloud because we don't have a lot of time remaining, but I'm going to go through what can be done to improve the situation and to have students that are in a more positive mental state and therefore have a better well-being. So at first, what could be done at the system level, so at the higher education system level in a given country? I think, first of all, what would remove a strain on the mental health of students is the fact of having adequate support systems. So it means having systems of grants, and ESU will always advocate for grants over loans. So sufficient grants to survive according to your own situation. But it's not only having grants, it's also having access to social support, to a healthcare system that actually includes all students. One issue that we encounter very often is that when you are an international student, sometimes you don't really have access to healthcare. You theoretically have healthcare access in the country that you are studying in. But in fact, maybe you have to pay and then get reimbursed. But who will spend 60 euros when you need to wait to have them back? So that's, healthcare system that actually includes everybody is very, very important. The admission procedures and the information that goes with them. If you already need to fight to find information on how to enroll to higher education, that's already one obstacle that you are going to go through as a potential student. The housing solutions and housing support, as we mentioned before. Transport solutions. So it can be reductions in price for students. It can be free access for students to go to university. It can be any kind of solution, but they need to be set in place. And in ESU's position, the transport fee reduction or abolishment should not be limited by age, but by student status or economical status. Because in many countries, once you turn 25 or 26, even if you're still a student, you still have to pay the full price. And something very important is the awareness on the issue. That's at the system level, the higher education system level, there is awareness that mental health is something that it does, like it does influence your chances of completion and accessibility, and of course this is linked to anti-discrimination measures and to actually look at the system and see how inclusive the very system is in its own procedures. At institution level, it can be academic support, as we mentioned before, accessibility to counseling services on the campus for any kind of student. So counseling on any kind of matter, on psychological questions, but also it can be on, I want to apply to have a dorm. How do I do? So counseling. Medical facilities, financial support, because in some cases the state, the system provides grants and support, but sometimes in some countries the university can also provide some financial support and material support to students. The anti-discrimination measures are quite common in everything, and it's at campus level, listening and believing. When students mention the workload, mention harassment situation, mention curricula that are not well designed, they need to be believed, and this needs to be taken into account. And it also means that you need to evaluate your own procedures as an institution and your own way of functioning. And to finish, what can we do as student representative? I don't know if there are some student representative here or people involved in some kind of student organizations. But what we need to do is advocate at all level, meaning we need to mainstream the issue of mental health through everything in our work. It's not only having a specific paper on that. It's thinking about it in whatever that you are going to advocate for. When you talk about quality, there is a link with mental health as well at some point. It's organizing on campuses some kind of peer support campaigns, and overall being always being a more inclusive and accepting movement, promoting healthy behaviors, and working actively towards ending the stigma on mental health in general. And that's the last slide, I promise. As ESU, we are currently working on a mental health charter, because at the moment we mention mental health in many of our different policy papers, resolution statements, but at the moment we want to have a paper, an internal paper specifically going into more details about mental health in the context of higher education. And to do so, we are working with different partners across Europe and nationally who are experts on the field. And we think it's very important to, it's also our role to raise awareness on mental health and to end the stigma. And mental health is one of our priority for the period 2018-2020, and it's going to be again probably for the next period. And to finish with, during our events, we have four conferences a year where we have a lot of members that are gathering. We are at the moment trying to set procedures and spaces where participants can have support in case it's needed for their mental health. So there we go. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, or we will do after.
Thank you very much, Ellen. Now we are going to do so that Lisa will give her talk, and afterwards we have time for questions and other ideas. So, Lisa.
Well, hello and good day for everyone. My name is Liisa Hyytiäinen, and I'm very delighted to be here with all of you. I'm going to talk about well-being of students in higher education on a Finnish context. And thank you very much for Helen. She had very good presentation and very good points. I do have some same points, but also some different. So I'm vice president in SAMOK, Suomen opiskelijakuntien liitto, in English University of Applied Sciences students in Finland. I'm responsible of educational equality. What SAMOK is, we are nationally acting student organization. We have 25 member student unions, and our mutual goal is to promote students of University of Applied Sciences interests. Our aim is to turn students' views to politics. We support and serve student unions in a way that they have best possible chances to promote interest of students on a local level. We have members about 71,000, and we represent about 140,000 higher education students. These are agendas I'm going to talk about. I'm talking about accessibility and well-being, diversity of students in higher education, educational equality, then some few examples of practices for supporting students' well-being, and, of course, conclusion. Well, accessibility and well-being. The accessibility of higher education consists on a wide range of things, and a lot has to be done before applying to higher education to make it accessible at all. And once students are in universities or in universities of applied sciences, accessibility is enhanced by the well-being of students and adequate support for their studies. Recently, we have heard some alarming news about students' well-being. More and more students struggle with their mental health. The University Student Health Survey 2016, which was conducted to investigate students' physical, mental, and social health, tells that 30% of students have suffered from mental health problems. The underlying causes of mental health symptoms include students' uncertain and scarce livelihood, increasing number of students' experience of loneliness, and possible problems in the study environment. In recent years, the financial aid for students has been cut. The study grant is not nearly enough to cover living costs, and students are forced to get into debt. Students in Finland are currently getting into debt at a record pace. Young people are also under pressure to complete their degree, get a good job, and do well in life. According to the student barometer published in 2016, only half of the students feel that they belong to a study-related group, such as student organization, on their class. One-third of students experience loneliness every now and then, and 10% are often lonely. Half of the students feel that they don't have enough people who are very close to them. All of this is extremely worrying, and it requires actions from both universities and student organizations. Loneliness hurts, and it significantly affects students' well-being and academic performance. There's also one more issue that is not often discussed, but it's a major problem in universities and universities of applied sciences. This issue is bullying in higher education institutions. It's easy to discuss bullying at a workplace or in elementary school, but bullying in universities seems to be a blind spot for us. It's often explained by saying that it's about two people fighting or not getting along. But bullying is much more serious. It can include being excluded from a group, constant vicious comments, belittling one's opinions, or outright name-calling. 6% of University of Applied Sciences students and 5% of university students say they have experienced bullying during their studies. All in all, students face many challenges in their everyday lives. We must work together with the universities, universities of applied sciences, and student organizations to remove these challenges. In order to do that, we must first take a look what kind of group are we talking about when we are talking about students' well-being. Diversity of students in higher education. Students are a more diverse group contrary to what is usually thought. Usually when people think of students, they think of young people, maybe in their 20s, who have just graduated from high school or vocational school, are feeling the best of their lives. Most of the students are like this, but I would like to expand this point of view. There are a few things should be considered when we talk about students in higher education and how do they really feel. Recognizing a diversity of students is important because only then it is possible to create services that support their well-being. We were able to get good data of this subject from two big researches: Student Health Survey 2016 and Values and Stances of Students in University of Applied Sciences 2019. In these researches, we heard that diagnosed depression and anxiety disorder has tripled since year 2000. 8% of students had a diagnosed learning difficulty, illness, or disability that affected their learning. 4% suffered from a chronic long-term disease. 26% say they do belong in some minority based on, for example, sexual orientation, belief, or ethnical background. Compared to other students, minorities are 3 times more likely to encounter harassment, bullying, or discrimination. 7.5% say they have been bullied occasionally or often during higher education studies. 9% are teetotalers, and 76% feels their physical well-being is good or very good, but only 66% says same thing about their mental health. And one interesting fact, particularly from students in universities of applied sciences, is that 21% are with family and they have children. Understanding the diversity of students is important in many reasons, also when we wish to make sure that all the students complete their studies. Have you thought that this can also contribute to accessibility? Being able to complete one's studies is a part of accessibility. We can't think it's just enough to get students into universities. It is important to get them graduate as well. Teaching staff and other staff members have a key role in supporting different students. We are no longer living in time where everyone has to fit in the same mold. Working life changes rapidly, and companies operate in a global environment and cope with its challenges. Diverse workforce meets these challenges. With a key role comes a great responsibility, and we cannot leave staff members alone with this burden. Question is, how can we support staff members in higher education? One concrete solution which could be put into effect would be offer more information and education of multiculturalism, gender sensitivity, and special needs of different minority groups. Then let's go to educational equality. In a long term, education and higher education contribute to well-being. It is known that the more we have educated people, the less we have unemployment. Polarizing society, inequality, and exclusion are the biggest challenges of our time. Educational equality is one of the most effective ways to solve these challenges. That is why society must guarantee everyone the same level of access to getting skills and knowledge that are needed in working life. The most important questions in this ring is how we make sure that everyone has a genuine opportunity to be educated as far as their own resources and motivations go. That is why government must prepare a strategic program of educational equality, which covers whole educational path and is ambitious. This will ensure that Finland is a model country of educational equality in 2030s. There is still much work in accessibility. In Samok's point of view, some major problems are students with minority background are less likely to complete their studies, inheritance of education level and impact of socioeconomic background, and gendered choices of working fields. Minority background. Minorities generally refer to people with an immigrant background, people with disabilities, people with long-term illnesses, people with learning disabilities, people with mental health problems, and people from certain ethnic groups. Common thing for these groups is that they have a weaker possibilities to complete their studies and to access higher education. And inheritance of education level. In Finland, it's very common that students who are applying to universities have at least one parent who has an academic degree. Children of doctors become doctors, and manual workers' children become manual workers. Socioeconomic background has a huge impact on choices, what you young people make about their studies. And gendered choices. Compared to the rest of Europe, Finland has a vastly gendered working life. Did you know that 80% of engineering students are male? When 80% of students of social services and healthcare are female? Why this is a problem? Shouldn't everyone be free to choose where to apply? Of course they are, but this indicates that there are strong biases. As I mentioned earlier, diverse workforce is the best way to meet the challenges companies have while operating in a global environment. Then let's go some practices. How student communities can support attachment to the studying environment and promote students' well-being. In Finland, student unions have a legal mandate to operate as a promoter of the students' interest in universities and universities of applied sciences. Student unions represent students' voice and are a link between students and universities' management. They have an important role working with students' well-being in universities. What many of you might not think so often, student communities such as student unions and student associations have an important role when we want to create social relations between students. Social relations have a huge impact on students' well-being. Good practice for supporting this are, for example, peer tutors. In Finland, we have peer tutors who are usually second or third year students. Their role is to be the person who helps pressure in the beginning of their studies and get to know how everything works in a university. Finnish tutors don't offer help with the studies, but instead they offer peer support and good tips for studying. And most importantly, they help to meet other students and make it easier for new students to become a part of their new studying environment. Student associations create a fine environment for students to get to know each other also outside studying. For example, organizing different kind of events. Just like at a workplace, members of community feel more socially related when they have possibilities to meet each other and spend some time together without work pressure. Student unions also do advocacy work in their institution or higher education and in their city, and nationally through national student organizations SAMOK and SYL. Cooperation and connection between different student organizations and management of universities is usually very good in Finland. Management includes students in decision making and listens to their needs. For example, sports services for students are usually developed by needs of them. But how institutions of higher education can support this? Institutions of higher education support students' well-being, for example, these ways. Quality and feedback systems of education, which are used to develop teaching and pedagogy. It has immediate impact on how students enjoy their studies and are coping. Healthcare, then when student faces challenges that are so big that a tutor can't help, for example, coping or well-being, they can turn to student counselors, study advisors, or psychologists. And these professionals are ready to help students and support them. And offering different sports services, and also cafeterias and canteens are very important to support students' well-being. The first concrete step where a student becomes more attached to their studying environment is the beginning of studies and getting to know their own class or group. In thesis called Yhteisöllisyys korkeakoulun käytävillä, yhteisöllisyys yhdessä yhteisöksi hankkeen pilottioppilaitoksissa, as in English, social relations in corridors of an institution of higher education, social relation in yhdessä yhteisöksi projects pilot universities, found that there is a strong need for facilitated grouping. Of those students who are coming to institutions of higher education are adults or at least young adults, and they are expected to work independently. That doesn't change the fact that they have one common need. Need to get to know others and have a feeling of being part of the group. It can't be taken granted that grown-ups are able to form groups, and even those who have spent years in working life might need help to become part of group. Teaching staff and other staff members have a chance to be in a key role in this. Have you thought that by promoting grouping, you promote students' commitment to their studies and thereby support students' well-being? Well, in conclusion, generally, higher education students in Finland are doing fine, and we have practices for supporting their well-being. However, mental health problems and challenges with coping are increasing. We have a continuous need for support services, and we must have decent resources in them. Other thing I'd like you to remember is that when there are several groups who have lower possibilities to access and complete higher education, so completing academic degrees must be boosted among them. For that, we must work harder together. I hope you remember and work for EEA. They stand for Educational Equality and Accessibility. Thank you.
Thank you very much, both of you, Elena and Lisa. And now we have time for comments and questions. And Henrik and Tapio will run with the microphone so that we will catch your voice. And you can ask in Finnish or in English.
Please have a seat.
Thank you for your inspiring talks, but I would like to ask both of you, how do you see the role of teaching in supporting student well-being? So for my eyes, you talk a lot about other things, but not the teaching itself.
Do you want to start?
Yeah. Thank you for your question. Well, I think teaching has quite a big role to play as well. And when I mentioned in my presentation the question of the workload of students, for me it's directly related to the teaching. the issue of teaching and what you are going to ask from your students in a certain class. So this is an example of what a professor can take into account when designing their classes, and also take into account the rest of the classes that are usually taken in a given program, and actually respecting the ratio of ECTS and hour, because ECTS correspond to a certain amount of hours, and what we see throughout Europe is that often the workload does not adequate at all with the ECTS, and in some cases you have less work than the amount of ECTS, but in many cases as well you have too much work to do for the number of ECTS related to a certain class, which means that at curricula level you can actually be overworked if every class is in the same situation. So yeah, from my end, those are examples that teaching can influence. Maybe one more is, and I think you mentioned it, is how during the very classes, the professors work to include everybody in the way they speak, in the kind of material they use, in the very design of the presentation. Even the colors of the presentations can be exclusive to certain people, for instance, Daltonian people. So there is a lot of things that can be thought about, and in the way, the role you can play in grouping, as you mentioned.
Yes, thank you for the question. I think Helen said about everything, but teaching has an enormously big role for students' well-being. Teaching staff is really in a key role, as I mentioned, supporting students' well-being. All begins from how teachers communicate and are interacting with students, pedagogy, how students respond to that. Is pedagogy updated? And especially when we have students, some students are daytime, full-time students. We have also students who are studying part-time. How teachers are able to teach different methods and ways these groups. But yes, teachers and teaching does have a very huge impact on students' well-being.
I'd like to make a question while you're thinking of some more. One of the things we have created in the OHO project is accessibility criteria. We are very interested to see how the institutions will take it, and we are keeping our thumbs up for that. But I would like to ask you, from your perspective, from ESU or some, how can you see that? Can we have a nice dream of having an accessibility criteria European-wide? Is that possible? What do you think? Or what is your reflection of the idea of having a accessibility criteria in general?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, and I forgot to mention it in the presentation, actually it's in the making at the moment. But because I don't know if you've been following or involved in the Bologna process and the Bologna follow-up group at any level, but there is at the moment in this term an advisory group for social dimension. That is co-chaired by us, by our president of ESU, and by the Ministry of Croatia. And there are many countries participating in it. And this working group had, as terms of reference, to create principles and guidelines for social dimension across Europe. And now, a few months away from the ministerial conference, the work of this advisory group is coming to an end. And the principles and guidelines for social dimension have been drafted. They're going through all the the internal procedures of the Bologna process, but this draft exists, and it came from the will of having. Of starting something, of having European-wide criterias for the social dimension, for the systems, and maybe later at country and national level, some will be created for the very systems. But as ESO, it was very important to bring that forward in this advisory group and to be able to work in that direction, to have something that is actually at the European level pushing the countries to do even more in terms of social dimension and, of course, in terms of accessibility, because when we talk about social dimension, accessibility is directly involved. So, yes, if you follow the news about the Bologna process in the next few months, you will... and we will obviously, as we spread the news when it comes out and when everything is fixed and settled and decided within the structure. But yeah, keep that in mind.
That's great news here that is happening in Europe as well and in national level. I think, and we think it's very important too. Voisin vastata tähän suomeksi niin en sitten takella sanoissani, että nyt tämän uudessa hallitusohjelmassahan on korkeakoulutuksen saavutettavuussuunnitelma. Hienoa, että se on sinne saatu. Ja tämä tulee varmasti vastaamaan tähän saavutettavuuskriteeristöön. Ja tässä on myös hyvä paikka tuoda hyviä konkreettisia esimerkkejä sinne, mitä saavutettavuussuunnitelma tulisi pitämään sisällään.
Liisan hyvä kommentti saavutettavuudesta koskee myös meitä. Voitte kysyä myös suomeksi. Eiköhän me käännetä se kuitenkin niin, että jos tuntuu, että sanat ei heti löydy englanniksi, niin käyttäkää sitä kieltä, mikä tuntuu sopivimmalta tässä. Vieläkö on kysymyksiä yleisölle? Mä voisin jatkaa. Hei, tuolla on tuo. Ulla haluaa kysyä tässä kohtaa. Käytä sitä mikrofonia.
I would like to ask you, could you give us one tip for a teacher, a counselor, for the university staff member, what would be the most important act or way of thinking or, well, a tip that would be the most important if we think about social inclusion and social welfare during the studies.
Okay, I can start. I think it's about being interested about people and different kind of people and personalities. As I said, we no longer live in time where everyone needs to fit in the same mold, and the students are living in very different stages of life. So get to know What are the main challenges, and for example, get to know different medical conditions, what need to be taken considered in teaching and counseling, but most of all being interested of other people's and their minds and thoughts and conditions.
I would say, well, as academic staff, listen to the student, believe them, and let's say act upon it. But I think the trust between students and professors need to be there. And most of the time, if the students are going to say, to first of all gather the confidence and to then go talk to the professor and say the workload is way too much, maybe take the step to believe them. So I would say listen, believe, act, but I would also say, well, unite with them, because even if in the common mindsets, sometimes professors, I mean academic staff and students can be opposed. People think that there are two parties that are in two different sides. Well, I think there's much more in common than what we can think of. So there's also this unity that can exist between students and professors to actually actively change the whole system. Because the way classes are designed and teaching is done is one part, but I think the systemic part is actually the crucial one. So everything that is related to financial support to end the students' precarity and precarious situation. So yeah, listen, believe, act, and unite and work together. To sum it up. Thank you.
Yes, I think thank you very much for highly interesting talks, both of you. Mine is not so much a question, it's about a comment. I would like to thank you for bringing up the complex issue we are talking about, how it is the policy level, it's the accessible criteria, it is about the systems that we work with, but then again it is about the culture that we create inside the institutions, and it comes to the level of how we behave towards each other in the teaching context. But also, I very much appreciated the student union, and I think in some cases it's so crucially important how the peer colleagues, the students towards the students, students together, how you treat each other and take. The colleague or the other student member with you, and I appreciated the interaction between the student union and the staff members, so it's very important, and the feedback systems that we need to listen in the teaching situations, but we have to have a good inquiries going on, that we all the time know what is going on, what are the crucial matters relating to the workload and relating to the interaction and the issues that are going on in the student body. So thank you for bringing up the whole kind of the whole picture that we are working in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
So if Lisa and Ellen wants to say something still, you are free to say, and then I think we start to be a little bit hungry, so it's nice to have lunch soon, but please, if there is still something that you want to say, feel free.
Well, I think everything was said before, but don't hesitate to come to me to ask questions or to get in touch with me or any colleagues at ESU if you have any question. Thank you, OHO Project, for inviting me, and have a great conference.
And thank you as well from me. And if you have anything to ask, please do contact. We are representing University of Applied Sciences students, and there's also SYL in Finland, Suomen ylioppilaskuntien liitto, who are representing university students. And I really like to thank all of you who are working for educational equality and accessibility. Your work and what you do is very important, and without you, things wouldn't get any better. So thank you very much.
Kiitos kaikille tästä aamupäivästä. On ollut ilo kuulla päähenkilöitä, eli opiskelijoita ja opiskelijoiden edustajia. Tästä meidän on hyvä ponnistaa iltapäivään ja saamaan välineitä, ajatuksia, toteuttaa sitä, mitä vielä paljon tarvii toteuttaa. Hyvää ruokahalua kaikille ja siirrytään eri ravintoloihin.